Some years previously, the old bull had been darted from a helicopter by members of the government elephant research project, and while he was unconscious, they had riveted the radio collar around his neck. This made Tukutila a designated research animal and placed him beyond the reach of legal safari hunters. Of course, he was still at risk from ivory poachers, but no licensed hunter could legally hunt him. While the elephant was under the drug, Dr. Glyn Jones, the government veterinarian in charge of the project, had measured his tusks. His report was not for general publication, but his secretary was a nubile blonde who thought that Sean Courtney was the most awe-inspiring thing she had ever seen in her young life. She had duplicated a copy of the report for Sean. From Jones's measurements, one tusk will weigh 130 pounds and the other a few pounds lighter, Sean had whispered to Ricardo as they studied the old bull, and they had stared at the tusks hungrily. At the lip, they were as thick as Sean's thigh, and there was no taper to them. They were stained almost black with vegetable juice. The tips were rounded off bluntly, according to Dr. Jones. The left tusk was 8'4.5", the right tusk 8'6.25", from lip to tip. In the end, they had walked away and left the old bull to his solitary wandering. And then only 6 months ago, the blonde secretary had been making breakfast for Sean in her tiny bachelor flat in the avenues in Harare, when she mentioned, quite casually, "Did you know that Tukutila has thrown his collar?" Sean was lying naked on her bed, but he sat up quickly. "What did you say?" "Jonesy was in an awful pet. They put the radio direction finder on Tukutila, and all they got was his collar. He had managed to tear it off at last and had hurled it into the top of a msasa tree." "You clever little beauty," Sean said happily. "Come here and get your prize." And the girl had dropped her dressing gown on the floor and rushed across the room. So Tukutila had thrown his collar and was no longer a designated research animal. Once again, he was legal game. That same day, Sean had sent a cable to Ricardo in Alaska and received the reply the following afternoon. "I'm coming. Stop. Book me. Full safari, 1st July to August 15th. Stop. I want that jumbo. Stop. Capo." And now, as Ricardo stood on the crest of the kopje, studying that far-off smudge of elephant grey in the forest below, he was shaking with excitement. Claudia studied him with open amazement. This was her father, the coolest cat in the business, the master of savoir-faire. She had seen him negotiating a $10 million contract and betting a prince's ransom across the tables at Vegas without any visible emotion. And here he was, shivering with excitement like a schoolboy on his first date, and she felt a rush of affection for him. "I haven't understood just how much this means to him," she thought. "Perhaps I'm being too hard. This is the last thing in his life that he truly wants." And she wanted to put her arms around him and hug him and tell him, "I'm sorry, Papa. I'm sorry that I've been trying to deprive you of this last pleasure." Ricardo was not even aware of her existence. "It could be Tukutila," he repeated softly, speaking almost to himself, as though he was trying to will it to be so. But Sean shook his head. "I've got 4 good trackers watching the river. Tukutila couldn't cross without them knowing. Besides, it's still too early. I wouldn't expect him to leave the valley until the last water holes along the escarpment dry up. Another week or 10 days at the earliest." "He could have slipped through," Ricardo ignored his explanation. "It's just possible that it's him down there." "Oh, we'll go down and have a look, of course," Sean nodded in agreement. Ricardo's passion did not amaze him as it had his daughter. He understood it totally, had seen it in 50 other men like Ricardo, the powerful, aggressive, successful men who made up his clientele, men who did not try to conceal or check their instincts. The hunting imperative was part of every man's soul. Some denied or suppressed it. Others diverted it into less blatantly violent avenues of expression, wielding clubs on the golf course or rackets on the court, substituting a little white ball for the prey of flesh and blood. But men like Ricardo Montero gave their passions full rein and would settle for nothing less than the ultimate thrill of the chase and the kill. "Shadrach, bring the Buana's .416 banduki," Sean called. "Job, don't forget the water bottles. Matatu, Akwendi, let's go." They went directly down the steep front slope of the kopje, leaping lightly from boulder to boulder, and at the bottom they dropped naturally into their running formation, with Matatu leading to pick up the spoor, followed by Job and Sean with their almost supernatural eyesight to sweep the forest ahead, the clients in the middle, and Shadrach in the drag to hand Ricardo the Rigby when he needed it. They went swiftly, but it was almost an hour through the forest before Matatu picked up the huge, dished spoor in the soft earth and the litter of stripped twigs and branches that the elephant had strewn behind him as he fed. Matatu stopped on it, turning back to roll his eyes and give shrill piping cries of disgust. "It's not Tukutila. It's the old one-tusk bull," Sean told them, "the same one whose spoor we saw on the road this morning. He circled back this way." Claudia watched her father's face and saw the intensity of his disappointment and felt her heart squeeze for him. Nobody spoke on the march back to the Toyota, but when they reached it, Sean said softly, "You knew it wasn't going to be that easy, didn't you, Capo?" And they grinned at each other. "You're right, of course. The chase is everything. Once you kill, it's only dead meat." "Tukutila will come," Sean promised him. "This is his regular beat. He'll be here before the new moon. That's my promise to you. But in the meantime, there's the lion. We will go check bait to see if Frederick the Great is going to oblige us." It was only another 20 minutes driving to the dry river bed below the hide and the buffalo bait. They left the Toyota parked on the white sand, and Claudia felt a tremor of last night's terror as they climbed the path up the far bank and saw the pad marks of the lioness in the earth behind the hide. Then Sean and his gun-bearers were talking excitedly, and Matatu was chittering like an agitated guinea fowl. "What is it?" Claudia demanded, but nobody answered her, and she had to trot to keep up with them as they hurried down the open tunnel, through the bush to where the remains of the carcass hung in the wild fig. "Somebody tell me what's happening," Claudia begged them. But she stayed well back from the bait. The stench was just too much for her to bear. The men showed no distaste at all as they prodded and peered at the reeking remains, and even Claudia could see the difference from the previous evening. Yesterday the carcass had been virtually untouched. Now more than half of it had been devoured. Only the head and forequarters remained, and Sean had to stretch up above his head to reach it. The bones of spine and ribs had been chewed to splinters, and the thick black skin ripped by claw and fang, so that it hung in tatters like a funeral flag. While Sean and the gun-bearers examined the carcass, Matatu searched the earth around the base of the fig tree, giving excited little yelps like a hound questing for the scent. Sean picked something off the jagged white ribs of the carcass and showed it to Ricardo, and both of them laughed excitedly, passing whatever it was from hand to hand. "Won't somebody talk to me, please?" Claudia insisted, and Sean called to her. "Come on, then, don't stand so far away." Reluctantly, holding her nose theatrically, she approached, and Sean held out his right hand to her, palm up. On it lay a single hair, almost as long and black as one from her own head. "What is it?" Ricardo took the hair from Sean's hand, holding it between thumb and forefinger, and Claudia saw that the back of her father's arms were goosebumped with excitement, and his dark Italian eyes glowed as he replied, "Mane hair." And then he seized her hand and pulled her across to the base of the fig tree. "Take a look at that. Look what Matatu has found for us." The little tracker was grinning with proprietorial pride as he indicated the churned earth. 5 cubs and 2 lionesses had trampled the soft footing into talcum dust, but 1 perfect print stood out in the confusion. It was double the size of the other smudged prints, as big as a soup plate, and looking at it, Claudia felt again the stirring of terror. Whatever animal had left that pad mark must be monstrous. Last night, after the lionesses had seen us off, he came. He waited until the moon had set, and he came in the darkest hours of the night, Sean explained. And he left again before dawn. He ate damn near half a buffalo, and then he took off again before first light. I told you that he's a cunning old devil.
A lion? Claudia asked.
Not just any old lion, Ricardo shook his head. Frederick the Great has come at last. Sean turned away and beckoned his men to come to him. The three of them, Job, Shadrach and Matatu, squatted around him in a circle, and Claudia and Ricardo were forgotten as they planned the hunt, working out their tactics, discussing in detail every aspect, every eventuality. Their concentration was absolute, and it was an hour before Sean stood up and came to where Ricardo and Claudia sat in the shade. "The trick is going to be getting him to come in before nightfall," he told them, "and we all agree that the only way to do that is to set up a fresh bait for him and build a new hide. The lionesses have rumbled this one, and old Fred is going to be as suspicious as all hell. He's going to lurk out there until well after dark, or until we can entice him in somehow." Sean sat down between them and was silent for a moment. "You know, Capo, sometimes for a good friend, someone I can trust, I'm prepared to bend the rules a little." He spoke deliberately, drawing with a twig in the dirt between his feet and not looking at Ricardo. "I'm listening," Ricardo nodded. "There may be only one way that we will get this lion," Sean said softly. "Jack light him." They were silent for a long time, and though Claudia didn't know what Jack light meant, she realized that Sean was suggesting something beyond law or decency, and that her father was tempted. She was angry with Sean for putting temptation in her father's way, but she knew better than to intervene. She kept silent and willed her father to refuse to give in to temptation. Ricardo shook his head. "No, let's do it right."
"We can try," Sean shrugged. "But he has been shot at over a bait and wounded once. It won't be easy."
They were silent again for almost a full minute. Then Sean went on. "The lion is a nocturnal animal. The night is his time. If you truly want this lion, I think you'll have to take him in darkness." Ricardo sighed and shook his head. "I want him very badly, but not badly enough to kill him without respect." Sean stood up. "It's your safari, Capo," he agreed quietly. "I just want you to know that there are not many men I'd make that offer to. As a matter of fact, offhand, I can't think of anyone else I'd do it for."
"I know," Capo said. "Thank you, Sean."
And Sean walked back to the fig tree to help his men to lower the remains of the carcass so the pride could reach it. As soon as he was out of earshot, Claudia asked her father, "Jack light? What is that?"
"Putting a spotlight on an animal after dark and shooting it in the beam. It's illegal, highly illegal."
"The bastard," she said bitterly. Ricardo did not react to her denunciation, but went on softly, "He was prepared to put his career on the line for me. That's one of the best things anyone has ever done for me."
"I'm proud that you refused him, Papa, but he's a bastard." "You don't understand," he said. "You can't possibly understand."
He stood up and walked away, and immediately she felt a throb of guilt. She did understand. She understood that this was his last lion and that she was spoiling the pleasure of it for him. She was torn between her love for him and her protective instinct for that marvellous animal and her sense of right and justice. "It should be so easy to do the right thing," she thought, "but it so seldom is."